Over the years, I must have fielded this question from clients and shareholders hundreds of times. If you're just starting out in life, it's not hard to store a modest amount of gold. A dozen coins were worth over $20,000 as of mid-2020. Stacked up, they don't take up much more than 1.5 inches of space. A drawer, safe deposit box, wall safe, or any secure cranny will do. Some people have a more serious storage problem. One client bought a gun safe made for shotguns and rifles. That worked for a while. The problems only grow from there. I had dinner early this year with a gold investor so wealthy he pays a vaulted storage company to guard it. Worse, he had the gold in Asia and had to relocate it to Europe once. While governments and central banks have unlimited storage options, individuals and corporations don't. You have to consider storage. Paranoid types might cut a hole in the drywall behind a painting. Wall studs are 16 inches apart in a standard home. Fashion a little shelf and stack the gold up. Repair the drywall, repaint, and you'll probably die of old age before someone finds it. The most paranoid might bury gold. An old friend calls this midnight gardening. I don't recommend it. Spread your gold out. The bank, a safe, another safe, and another place nobody would think to look. That's the best you can do. Remember, it's wealth insurance you hope you don't need. Once you've maxed out your capacity for physical gold, there's an easy way to add more without adding headaches. I'm talking about the New York Stock Exchange. Between 1.5 and 2% of all the known gold in the world sits in vaults leased by physical gold ETFs. That's exchange-traded funds set up for the sole purpose of buying gold. There are several. However, they're not all the same. There are two general types. One has the gold, the other doesn't. Haves and have-nots. There's not much point in buying physical gold if you can't access it. I know this might sound obvious, but not all the physical gold ETFs have actual gold. A few do. The others trade gold futures representing a claim on gold. The two are not the same. Futures trade on a futures exchange. They exist for most major commodities. The origin of futures makes a lot of sense. Using them to buy gold does not. Say a farmer produces 10,000 bushels of corn in the fall. Corn sells for $4 per bushel. He can pre-sell his 10,000 bushels of corn for maybe $3.80 today. A speculator enters into a contract for the farmer's future production, paying him $3.80 per bushel, $38,000 total, today in exchange for delivery of the actual corn in the fall. This $38,000 payment gives the farmer badly needed cash to plant, pay workers, and take care of his farm. If the price of corn falls in half, he makes out like a bandit. He doesn't owe the speculator anything other than the physical corn. However, if the price of corn shoots up to $5 a bushel, the speculator pockets the difference, as he is able to sell the corn for $5 a bushel when delivered, earning a $12,000 profit. It's important to understand how futures work to fully grasp why they are not right for gold investors. They might be okay for gold speculators, but even that doesn't make sense once you see the other options available. The largest U.S.-based gold ETF is SPDR Gold Shares, GLD. If you ask your wealth advisor to buy gold, he may suggest this ETF. GLD is the largest exchange-traded fund offering exposure to gold. It trades at high volume, averaging over $2 billion a day in the first half of 2020. For big fund managers, it's a good option. However, holding GLD shares does not entitle you to physical gold. The fund has gold in storage, but you can't have it. Worse, it may use gold futures contracts at times to maintain its gold exposure, and it might have a claim on gold from a pool with other claimants. GLD is a $60 billion fund. It's totally above board, but it deals in what we'll call paper gold. Another paper gold fund is iShares Gold Trust, IAU. This fund holds almost $24 billion worth of paper gold. It's another good option for funds, but again, there's no way to access the gold for shareholders. The most popular gold ETFs don't offer physical gold. That means if you owned $10 million worth of them, you can't get your hands on the physical gold they hold. At least have the option. There are ETFs that offer physical gold delivery. If the price is the same, it's only logical that these ETFs are more attractive than the most popular Wall Street products. Sprott Physical Gold and Silver Trust, CEF, offers delivery of physical metal. I do not recommend buying up shares of CEF and then calling on the fund to deliver gold. It's cumbersome and could have tax implications. The point is, CEF has the gold and silver too. I've been to the CEF corporate headquarters in Toronto several times. I've met with corporate management. They're gold people. Offering delivery of gold held by the fund is important to them. As a consequence, CEF is smaller than the big New York paper gold funds. CEF's market capitalization is only $3 billion, or 1/20th the size of GLD. $3 billion is plenty big, plus it has the metal. I'd be shocked if size holds CEF back as gold takes off. In fact, it's more likely there comes a day where its physical gold hoard earns a premium in the market. Turmoil in the gold market hit an extreme in the first half of 2020. In the first instance I've seen, physical gold and paper gold sold for widely different prices. As a reminder, paper gold is a futures contract, certificate, or some contractual claim on gold ounces. That's a portion of what some of the most popular ETFs hold. Physical gold means tangible metal held in vaults. That's what Sprott Physical Gold and Silver Trust holds. The next chapter explains why holding physical gold matters. For years, nobody thinks about the difference between paper and physical. Then, when turmoil hits, the cost of the real thing surges. By Morgan Stanley's measure, physical gold traded for $50 an ounce more than paper gold in the spring market turmoil of 2020. That's just one measure. I watched the gap between New York gold futures traded on the COMEX and physical gold on the London market surge to $80 an ounce in early April. The bottom line here is, if the real thing costs the same price, don't mess around with paper. In addition to the Sprott Trust, there's a smaller U.S.-based fund run by longtime gold investor Axel Merck. His fund is VanEck Merck Gold Trust, O-U-N-Z. Merck's trust is very small, clocking in at a $250 million market capitalization. It trades about $2.75 million in volume per day. However, it offers delivery in smaller denominations than Sprott. During the early April 2020 shock to the paper versus physical gold market, Merck put out a press release stating his fund stood ready to deliver. The April shock is important. While Morgan Stanley only measured $50 per ounce between paper and physical gold, I witnessed as much as $80 per ounce. Gold dealers I know charged $150 per ounce more than the quoted gold price. They told me personally they could not possibly get gold cheaper. In fact, for weeks, they could not get their hands on a fresh supply of gold at all. Merck does have the gold. He'll send it to you. Again, I'm not sure that's the most practical way to build your personal gold hoard. The point here is, if the price is the same, you'd be crazy not to choose a fund that offers physical gold. One day it will matter. When that day comes, it's too late to switch. Chapter 23, The Extreme Ups and Downs of Mining Stocks. How would you like to have your hard-earned savings tied up in this stock? This is a real company. Its shares trade today, and it would love for you to buy them. You won't get the stock symbol from me. Think about the moves I'm about to describe. They really happened. To see what this is like, let's say you invested $10,000 before 2006 in the first move and did not buy or sell any stock through the ups and downs I'll describe. The first move sent shares up 4,021%, which turned your $10,000 into $412,000 in just 16 months. Not bad. You would definitely think you're a genius at that point. Just when you thought you had the market figured out, the stock craters, falling 96% in just 20 months. Your initial stake, now valued at $16,480, is still worth 65% more than when you started. That's good. But watching $395,000 evaporate probably wasn't easy. Good thing you didn't sell, as the stock ran 1,853% over the next few years. That puts you back at $321,850. Maybe now's a good time to get out. Hopefully you sold. The stock fell 98% in the next 2 years, turning your stake back into $6,437. This is a real stock. If you attend a mining investment conference today, the company likely has a booth. Stop by. It would love to give you a free pin with its logo on it, along with a quick sales pitch. You'll hear about how optimistic it is. There's a promising drill result coming. Can't talk about it too much. Sounds like a great story the first time you hear it. Here's what you don't know. Mark Twain had it right. A mine is a hole in the ground owned by a liar. That's how Mark Twain put it. He was pretty close. There are some admirable miners. I know a few of them. There could be one or two more I haven't met. Just before the 98% decline in the mining company stock we just talked about, my business partner Brett Heath and I went to Mexico to visit one of the company's projects. We never made it to the site. Years ago, Brett and I started an asset management firm focused on up-and-coming gold or silver mining stocks. We found there was no competent asset manager focused on up-and-comers, so we started one. We traveled extensively to see projects we own shares in. Our clients deserve that. At least that's how we saw it. The CEO of this company was slick. We knew that going in. Even accounting for his slippery ways, we thought he had the chance to create a major mining firm. At the time, he had one asset going into production. This means a big investment went into setting up the mining plant and infrastructure. That's usually not the best reason to own a mining stock. It was the company's other North American asset that had the potential to send the stock sky high. That project was nothing more than scrubland at the time. However, early indications showed potential for a giant mine. This is what makes mining stocks go boom. Finding and proving the ounces in the ground sends tiny stocks flying higher. Forget about all the future work required to bring the project online. It's the stock surge people want. There's nothing like a 4,000% gain. Have one, and you'll spend the rest of your life trying to find another one. Try not to go broke in the process. All alone in Mexico City. Brett and I traveled on a shoestring budget. We had millions of dollars under management. But in the asset management business, that's nothing. When we decided to visit a mine, it was an investment of valuable time and money. This company invited us, hoping after we saw its projects firsthand, we'd buy more stock. We'd been in Mexico for about 10 days, and this was one of our last companies to visit. After breakfast, we went down to the lobby to wait for our ride. It's customary for the mining firm to send someone for you. For starters, you don't know where you're going. Mexico City is absolutely enormous. It has more residents than New York. Two gringos sitting in traffic is a big waste of time. An hour passed, no ride. Then another hour. We got a call from the CEO. He tells us we should get a taxi to the bus terminal, take a 4-hour bus ride to a village, then he'll have someone meet us. No thanks. It was the beginning of the end for the CEO and his share price. We found out months later he was negotiating a desperation loan to keep the company afloat. Most of that money went to keep himself floating. He defaulted on the loan 2 weeks after receiving proceeds. Think about that. 2 weeks. It's worse than failing to make your first mortgage payment. After all that, the company is still in business today. Its stock ran up 137% in the spring of 2020. It will probably run more. Even junk floats when the tide rises. It's in your best interest I don't tell you the ticker symbol. A $35 million hole in the ground. One big gain in a mining stock, and you'll die trying to get another one. Mining is a terrible business. It's labor-intensive. It requires billions of dollars in capital expenditures. Gold is almost always buried in the world's most remote locations. Then there's Mark Twain's observation. However, when gold takes off, mining stocks tend to fly higher. Exploration companies can do even better. They don't have a mine. They hunt for the next big gold discovery. By my estimate, 99% of them fail. The 1% that succeed is all people remember. These are terrible odds. You'd never spin a roulette wheel with 1% odds on your side. People do this again and again with the mining business. I'm not talking about major mining companies like Barrick Gold, Agnico Eagle Mines, Kinross Gold, Newmont Corp, or Anglo Gold Ashanti. These firms operate with a high degree of discipline. It shows. Stocks of these five firms, called majors, are up on average 113% over the last year. That compares to a 36% rise in gold over the same period. It means these firms mining gold tripled the return of holding gold itself. While 113% is the average return for the five majors I mentioned, some did far better individually. AngloGold Ashanti led the pack, up 133%, while Agnico Eagle Mines was up only 63%. Wise investors pick a handful of stocks and avoid going all in on what they think will be the one winner. You'd expect 113% in a year is good enough to satisfy investors. Not in this business. They need more. Most of them will lose big trying to find it. Take the $35 million hole in the ground we saw one time as an example. Today, it's full of rainwater. Brett and I visited this mine site, also in Mexico, several years ago. The company didn't have enough money to fly someone down to meet us. They left us with the indigenous staff, which turned out to be a stroke of luck. These guys told us all the gory details about what happened to the $35 million. It took forever to get to the site. We flew a Cessna 208 Caravan across the Sea of Cortez. We stayed in a rundown beachfront hotel outside of town. The next day, we drove 5 hours in a truck to what I can confidently tell you is the middle of nowhere. On site, the local staff was happy to see us. These guys live in the camp. They're supposed to be drilling, cataloging core samples, and supervising the development plan. That was all at a standstill. All we saw was a big hole in the ground filled with rainwater. Years prior, a major mining firm pulled several hundred thousand ounces of gold from the hole. This smaller firm acquired the property hoping to start things back up. They figured there had to be more gold in that hole. They took the story to the market. Investors liked the plan. They poured a cumulative $35 million into the stock through private placements. Keep in mind, gold took off in late 2008. It ran 171% in under 3 years, topping out in September of 2011. This created a speculative frenzy. With gold on a run, large mining firms did very well. As the price rises, they make more money. Sell 100,000 ounces of gold for $100 more this year compared to last year, and it means an extra $10 million in income. Gold ran $1,200 during the 2008 to 2011 period, meaning miners raked in huge profits. Investors perked up and started looking for the next big gold mine. They financed almost anything with the word gold in the name. They mostly poured money down empty holes in the middle of nowhere. The stock price of the empty hole we visited shot up 9,300% as the market caught gold fever. It crashed 91% in the following 2 years. The local mining staff told us about the waste. They said the company executives formed their own private drilling company. They subcontracted work from the public company at higher than usual prices. They hired private Spanish tutors to help them assimilate. Workers told us this was mostly to help them meet girls in town. Good food, comfortable lodging, lots of first-class travel to international conferences. Oh, and helicopter service between the airport and the site for executives. That 5-hour truck ride, mostly on dirt roads, was too much to endure. These guys spent all $35 million. In the end, they had a flooded hole in the ground. We called it an expensive man-made lake. If you called it fraud, I wouldn't hold it against you. The crazy thing is, this stock still trades today. It changed names more than once. In the last year, as gold took off, it's up 350%. It will probably run more before finding gravity and finishing where it started. Lower the investment risk of mining stocks. If gold takes off to new highs, mining stocks could see an epic surge. Try to resist the urge to speculate. Yes, there will be huge winners. You'll read stories about them in the financial news. But there will also be lots of heartburn. Instead of looking for the next 5,000% winner and hoping it will change your life, take the easier way by owning the big, stable mining firms. The five listed earlier are good candidates on the front end of this gold bull market. Companies pulling gold from the ground should see surging profits as the price of gold moves. If costs are $1,200 an ounce and you plan for $1,500 an ounce gold prices, $1,700 an ounce is a tremendous surprise. If most of that extra $200 an ounce doesn't flow to the bottom line, there's a problem. Stick with the winners. The gold business is dangerous. It's been that way for centuries. It won't change anytime soon. While the profit-making potential of major gold mining firms during a gold bull market sounds exciting, there's one business that puts it to shame. In my experience, it's the most profitable business in the world. Chapter 24, The Most Profitable Business in the World. $2 million in and $1 billion out. That's 500 times the initial investment. Those are real numbers, audited, and owned by shareholders of what I call the world's most profitable business. There could be a company more profitable than Franco-Nevada Corp., FNV. I just haven't found it yet. Franco is the leading gold royalty company. Royalty is what you'd expect kings and queens to own. There's no dirty work involved. It's a straight 1% or 2% right off the top. If 100 ounces of gold come out of the ground, the royalty owner gets one of those ounces at no cost outside of the initial price paid for the royalty. Think of it like a tax. In this case, you're the tax man. In the mid-1980s, the two men who put Franco-Nevada together came to the same conclusion I shared with you in the previous chapter. Hunting for the next great gold mine is a racket. You might get lucky and actually find something. You might get a lift generally during a gold bull market, but you'll need some sort of happy accident or else you're bankrupt every few years. Franco talked about the idea of buying a few royalty claims to generate income. This steady cash flow coming in the door would keep the company afloat. One of the founders mentioned it to consultants helping the company in 1985. A few months later, one of the consultants called up and asked if Franco would pay him a finder's fee for a tip on a royalty for sale. They agreed. The consultant produced a copy of a classified ad from a local Nevada newspaper advertising a royalty for sale. Franco paid $2 million for the royalty. It paid the consultant $90,000 for producing the newspaper. The royalty covered 3,416 acres of dusty land in northeastern Nevada. Elko is the closest major town, about 1 hour east. A Texas-based oil company owned the royalty, but had to sell it due to financial trouble. West of Elko, several companies found gold known as Carlin-type. This is a lower-grade deposit, where it's almost hard to see the gold. There were clusters of similar finds in the area. Carlin-type gold deposits can be much larger than other types. That's what was under the ground on Franco's new royalty claim. Owning a royalty means a mining company hunts for gold on the property where you have a claim to a small part of every ounce found. Once production begins, 1% or 2% of everything produced flows directly to the royalty holder. The royalty company doesn't do any digging, exploring, or much of anything after acquiring the initial royalty interest. Within months of purchasing the royalty west of Elko, Franco got lucky. The mining company working on its claim discovered what's to this day one of the richest Carlin-type gold deposits in the world, producing in excess of 45 million ounces of gold to date. It's still in production today. That $2 million royalty will pay back over $1 billion. It still pays today. Franco hasn't paid a cent to dig, blast, haul, process, or transport the gold. Just as you'd expect from a king or a queen, it takes delivery of its percentage payment right on time like clockwork from the comfort of its Toronto offices. 27 billion with 26 people. Franco has over $1 billion in market value for each employee. I don't know any company that comes close. Apple has only $13 million in market value per employee. Microsoft has only $9.7 million. Google has only $7.7 million. E-commerce giant Amazon has a paltry $1.4 million of market value per employee. The royalty business is the most lucrative I know of, and Franco is its blue chip leader. It has hundreds of royalties today. It's a very big company, but only employs 26 people. The value of optionality. The secret to the royalty business is optionality. That means buying something with unlimited potential and minimal effort required on your part to realize it. There are not many things in life that meet this definition. Royalties are one of them, if bought properly, of course. Take Franco's $2 million royalty west of Elko, for example. I highly doubt the company knew how successful that royalty would become. They knew there was Carlin Gold in the area. They knew there was activity on the property, meaning active exploration for gold, but there's no way they knew how good it would be. The trick is to buy royalties near known gold deposits. Gold tends to show up in clusters. If there's a good find in the area, it's probably not the only one. You want a gold royalty next to that find. And you don't want to pay much for it. You never know which royalty will pay off. The best companies gather up as many of them as possible, betting one of them will hit. What was a smaller deposit at the time later became one of the largest gold mines in North America. Called Goldstrike, a large mining company discovered it on Franco's new property. As a reminder, everything found on a royalty claim falls under the claim owner's right to 1% or 2%, or whatever the terms dictate. Once the mining company found more gold, it expanded work on that site. It's been doing that for 30 years. Goldstrike is so big, you can see the hole in the ground from satellite images. With hundreds of royalty claims spread across the world, Franco still values optionality. It's not the expensive, high-profile royalties that make the company. It's the low-cost royalty near a previous gold discovery that has the power to turn $2 million into $1 billion. Investors who bought Franco stock in the 1983 IPO did very well. In his book, Get Smarter, one of the founders, Seymour Schulich, said $1,000 invested in the 1983 IPO turned into $1.25 million by early 2004 when Newmont acquired the company. That's 1,250 times your money, while other mining companies do all the hard work. Franco came back to the public markets in late 2007. Since that time, the price of gold is up 111%, and Franco's stock is up 823%, not including dividends. We're using the company's U.S. listing priced in dollars. It has a primary listing in Canada. Gold royalties are the best bet on higher gold prices I know of. All you have to do is look at a stock chart of Franco-Nevada as proof. Naysayers complain about royalty stocks. They say the stocks are too expensive. They say you miss out on the exciting potential for a huge gold discovery. They're right on both counts. Royalty stocks are expensive. As with most things in life, you get what you pay for. A 10-cent mining stock with the chance at a big discovery only needs your money to roll the dice. With 99 out of 100 failing to produce anything other than mounting losses, the risk on the 10-cent stock is high. I say that makes it more expensive than the royalty stock. Perpetual claim. The Franco founders started out on the other side of the business looking for gold. They realized they'd have to sell stock endlessly to finance gold exploration. Over time, that would dilute the value of their stock. If they ever did find something, they'd own a smaller piece of it. That's why they shifted to the royalty business. A royalty claim represents a perpetual, non-dilutable, free carried interest in a mineral asset. Once you acquire the claim, there's not much ongoing work. Perpetual means the royalty interest in a mineral claim goes on forever. Most are permanent. Some cover periods of time. Either way, The claim remains through tough years in the gold market. When a company picks back up and resumes looking for gold, the royalty is still there. Free carried interest means the royalty covers a percentage of everything found in the future. It's free in that it does not require the royalty holder to help finance development or operational expenses. Projects tend to keep going. Once the company is a mile underground, it usually keeps looking for more gold. Royalty claims cover everything found on the property. My money's on gold royalties. There are only 6 pure-play royalty companies today. That's my count, and excludes smaller and still unproven companies, or those that dabble in mining. My business partner Brett Heath and I learned a lot managing a gold mining stock fund. The most important thing we learned was mining is a terrible business. Again and again, we'd notice small footnotes in mining company financial reports. Some LLC or private individuals received a small payment monthly or quarterly tied to production. This was a royalty not owned by Franco-Nevada or the other large companies. Brett came up with an idea. There must be thousands of these orphaned royalties. Many of them cover ground owned by major mining companies. He figured at least a few of these individual owners would sell to him. Here's where the pitch shifted. Brett figured anybody can open up a big checkbook and make an offer for the royalty. That's passé and cheap considering the powerful nature of royalties. He told these owners the value of their royalty individually was too low. They deserved more. Selling to him in exchange for stock would not only get them fair value, over time they'd get a premium. The ones who listened to him early made a fortune. His company, Metallo Royalty and Streaming, ticker symbol MTA, came public at a split-adjusted 80 cents per share in late 2016. MTA traded for more than $6 a share just 40 months later. That does not include cash dividends paid monthly by the company and tied to 50% of its operating cash flow. To be clear, Metallo was not a sweetheart deal only available to the most connected. A decade of business interest and friendships didn't yield me any special treatment. Anyone had the chance to get into Metallo in late 2016. I even presented on the topic at the Sprott Resource Conference in Vancouver months in advance. Some people took action and still hold shares today. Having been in business with Brett through challenging times and fully understanding the power of the royalty business, I bought stock hand over fist in the open market. I kept that up for 40 months. Each time the stock rose, it seemed like it didn't rise enough to meet what I felt was fair value. About 2 months into operation, Brett asked me to join the board of directors. I gladly accepted. Sitting on the board of a public company carries an important responsibility. Directors represent shareholders. They should set the course for the company with that in mind. Then, they should get out of the way and let management work. Brett is the industry's most talented dealmaker. He's excruciatingly detailed when it comes to setting up a royalty deal. As of publication, he's done it 17 times, buying 48 royalty interests. Royalties are not easy to acquire. There's no website listing them for sale like real estate. The best deals start out as relationships. Brett figured out the trick to creating maximum shareholder value in a royalty company. Acquire royalties of a similar size. That means you don't want one giant royalty company and 50 small ones. Avoid paying up for immediate production. That means the value is in optionality, as Franco-Nevada demonstrated with its $2 million Nevada royalty purchase. Go cheap on dangerous regions. That means if the mine is in a war zone, bid accordingly. Avoid small producers. That means the majors pay their bills. The smaller firms run out of money, forcing you into court. Acquire optionality. This means buy as many royalty claims near proven production zones as you can get your hands on, and pay as little as possible, knowing one will eventually hit pay dirt. A first-hand example of this. In April 2020, Metallo announced a royalty transaction that checked all these boxes. Located about 1 hour southeast of Franco's billion-dollar royalty, it has similar potential. Metallo picked up royalties covering a large swath of land. The trick here is, Its royalty claims border a multi-million ounce mining operation, as the company showed in images in its press release announcing the deal. Chapter 25, summing it all up. Throughout this book, we laid the framework for what could be the most dramatic gold rally in modern history. In fact, it may go down as the most dramatic rally of any asset class. Gold is money, in a time when money has lost its way. The value of all the gold in the world is a fraction of the piles of debt, mountains of financial derivatives, and surging liabilities holding back the economy today. As the world's financial system barrels towards an inevitable reset, gold may be the only asset that holds value. We know the importance of owning physical gold. At least a good portion of this should be stored safely outside the financial markets. That means not traded on an exchange or held by an unknown custodian. There's no substitute for real, hold-in-your-hand gold. As the size of your gold hoard grows, you may need to own some gold on an exchange or held with a broker, but physical gold in and of itself is not an investment. It's wealth insurance. As the cracks in the financial system show, gold maintains its value. Through the Great Depression, gold held its value. Remember, during economic turmoil, your goal is to suffer less than the average person. Gold makes that possible. At the same time, gold mining stocks thrived. The cost of operating mines fell during the Depression years. Labor, energy, and materials all grew cheaper while the value of gold did not. The government fixed the price of gold in those days. Today, it floats freely. Nations, central banks, and wealthy families all move to gold during times of trouble. Speculators will follow. The problem is, there's not enough gold to meet that increased demand. As the price takes off, your physical gold goes up in value. Already today, the price of physical gold coins runs as high as $200 an ounce more than the price of gold quoted on the London Exchange. That means only one thing. Demand for physical gold is high. It's important to position in gold before it goes mainstream. The gold rally will only happen once. That means once gold takes off, there's no going back. Once you hear about it every day in the financial media, it's too late. A major gold rally will be good for physical gold holders. It could be life-changing for speculators. With physical gold safely stored, it's time to speculate. Here are the speculative segments of the gold industry in order of risk from lowest to highest. Royalty companies, major producers, mid-tier producers, junior producers, development companies, exploration companies. After two decades in the gold sector, I rarely touch exploration companies. There's the odd occasion a friend raises money and I make a small investment. Generally, I see these as a very bad use of hard-earned savings. If you can't resist, keep exploration company investments small. Since you're playing for a big surprise outcome, bet accordingly. $1,000 into the original Franco-Nevada turned into $1.25 million. Exploration stock buyers are usually not so lucky. That's why I've made a serious bet on gold royalties. However, nothing lasts forever. There will be a day to sell winning royalty stocks, major mining companies, and possibly even physical gold itself. While that day is not today, it's important to know how to spot it. Chapter 26, when to sell. It's important to remember that investing in gold stocks is not a forever trade. Everything has its season. There will be a time to sell gold stocks. There may even be a time to sell physical gold itself. Throughout my career, when to sell is the one question that always makes me laugh. People want certainty more than anything else. They think someone has the answers in advance. They never figure out that nobody has the answers. The best decision makers in the money game never look outside for the answers, only the clues. Once they see the clues, the decision is easy to make. Unfortunately, knowing when to sell is more feeling than science. Some indicators I use. I'd like to leave you with some of the indicators I use to determine when gold is too rich. The first is the Dow Gold Ratio. Pierre Lassonde, former chairman of Franco-Nevada, came up with the Dow Gold Ratio in an annual report to shareholders around 20 years ago. At the time, gold seemed cheap. He wanted to show people how cheap. He was right. Lassonde calculated how many gold ounces you could buy with one share of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. At the time, gold sold for under $300 an ounce. The Dow traded over 11,000. That put the Dow gold ratio over 36. It ran as high as 45 briefly in August 1999. He then explained that when that ratio reached high levels, it meant gold was too cheap. When it fell to the low single digits, gold was too expensive. Over time, it's easy to see the pattern he pointed out. Today, the ratio reads just over 14. It could fall much lower. For perspective, 1-to-1 would put the gold price even with the Dow. Imagine gold at $5,000 an ounce and the Dow Jones Industrial Average at $5,000. That would be an extreme. A ratio of 2-to-1 could be gold at $5,000 and the Dow at $10,000. There's no exact number to watch for in this ratio. When it gets low, very low, it's time to start thinking about making a move. Again, this ratio will help you spot extremes in both directions. When it read over 40, gold was so cheap almost no one wanted it. Gold went on to rise 643% over the next decade. That high reading on the Dow gold ratio marked an extreme low point for gold. A low reading of the ratio would likely mark another extreme, this time on the opposite side. If gold and the Dow traded for the same price, a 1-to-1 ratio, stocks would be so cheap people might think they'd go away forever. If you see this, it's time to at least consider what you can buy with the proceeds from selling gold. Compare gold to other assets. Assets are only valuable relative to other assets. That means if stocks doubled in value and real estate stayed flat, you could sell your portfolio and buy twice as much real estate. That would be a time to consider such a move. The most successful investors I know don't worry about what they paid for an asset. They only care what it's worth. You hear novice traders do just the opposite all the time. "I'll sell when I have a 20% gain," people say. This is as if their performance had some bearing on which way the market moves. Your purchase price has nothing to do with what's next for the stock price. When I sold my largest stock holding, Lincoln National, LNC, in early September 2008, I spared myself from a 90% decline. However, LNC was about 25% lower when I sold it than earlier that year. If I watched my cost and not the overall market, I might have held on. That would have been an expensive mistake. Pay attention to what you see in front of you, not the past. I expect the price of gold to surge as other assets disappoint their owners. Commercial real estate values rely on paying tenants. Same goes for apartments and other rentals. When people struggle to pay rent, the value of the buildings drops. When there's a loan on the property, trouble spreads. Gold depends on no other party for its value. Nobody has to pay rent, show up, or do anything. Gold's only serious threat is theft. That's typically preventable. If the value of gold shines and other assets falter, pay attention to sentiment. This is as easy as listening to what people say about each. When I bought rental houses for 10 cents on the dollar in 2009 and 2010, people were very negative. They'd ask me what I was up to, hoping to get an investment tip. I'd say, buying real estate as fast as possible. They'd lecture me on how dangerous real estate was, citing the recent mortgage meltdown. It wasn't until 2012-2013 that I started hearing people talk positively about real estate again. By 2014 and 2015, flippers and speculators were back. By the end of the decade, rap star Pitbull had conferences pushing hard money loans and quick turn investments in real estate. Time to get out. Nobody likes gold today. Generally speaking, if you start hearing people bragging about gold and gold stocks at cocktail parties, look out. It might be time to reassess the trade. Asset markets move higher until they run out of buyers. Think back to tech stocks in 1999. At the end of the mania, almost everyone owned at least one of them. The manager of a country diner in North Carolina wrote down a pink sheet ticker symbol in the back of my receipt in 1999. He told me he wasn't sure what the company did, but the stock was a real bargain. I'll never forget that. It was a sign that things had run their course. If you see gold making front page news, mainstream television headlines, or getting a lot of positive press, pay close attention. These are the indications something is getting hot. When it gets too hot, it's better to start moving away, or at least preparing to. The final stage of any bull market can be the most violent. In January 1980, the price of gold hit an all-time high of $850 an ounce. $400 of that came in the last 60 days. That's an extreme. Traders call it a blow-off, marking the top of the market. After that top, gold fell for 20 years before kicking off its next run. Everything has its season. Don't overstay any trade. Silver is an indicator. Another indicator I use frequently is the value of gold compared to silver. Like gold, silver is a precious metal once used as money. Silver coins have similar wealth storage properties. If you're just starting out, silver coins could be a more practical choice. They're cheap. Today, they're excessively cheap. I look at how many silver coins you can buy for one gold ounce. The 20-year average is 65. That means, on average, you could trade one gold ounce for 65 silver ounces. Considering the average, a ratio reading above 65 would be more expensive. Below 65, less expensive. Today, it's 110. In March 2020, it reached 125, an extreme no one had ever seen before. Here's why this matters. Silver is a speculative metal. People tend to gamble on silver more so than gold. Gold is the money of countries and kings. The wealthiest families in the world own gold as wealth insurance. Silver is difficult to own in large quantities. $8,000 worth of silver fills a size 14 shoebox. $8,000 worth of gold barely fills a shot glass. Going back to 2000, whenever this ratio reaches an extreme, it signals a big rally in gold and gold stocks. If that held true for the extreme reading of 125 in early 2020, it may signal the rally of a lifetime in those assets. You can calculate this ratio anytime by dividing the gold price by the silver price. If gold is 2,000 and silver is 50, the ratio will be 40. The last time the ratio hit 40 marked a good time to sell silver and gold along with the stocks mining each. At the threshold of major change. I wrote this book during the COVID-19 national shutdown in late spring 2020. I'd been involved in the gold market for a long time. I'd helped Metalla Royalty, ticker symbol MTA, grow from a penny stock to trading on the New York Stock Exchange. We used the stock to buy close to 50 royalties, increasing the company's market value nearly tenfold during my board tenure. Up until that point, I thought gold might take out its old highs of $1,900 an ounce reached in 2011, then add a few hundred more dollars per ounce. Maybe we'd get to $2,500 an ounce. Certainly, $3,000 an ounce would be an extreme. That's out the window now. As I sat at my Bloomberg terminal watching every major world government flood their economy with stimulus funds, I had to write this book. The first round totaled more than $12 trillion. That's roughly 15% of world GDP printed out of thin air. Why gold? Meanwhile, stocks cratered. They fell like a rock, and as of May 2020, only recovered part of their losses. However, everyone seemed eager to jump back into the market. To me, it looked like the 1930s, where people went broke trying to pick a bottom the market didn't find for 3 years. While stocks fell and didn't fully recover in spring 2020, gold fell and rebounded to a new high. This told me gold was ready to go. Why now? At the same time, I had friends asking about gold. They knew I spent years focusing on the subject. They had no idea how to buy it. Some even thought it was illegal. They needed a handbook to help them through the confusing maze. When this is over, every broker will tell you gold is a must-own asset. Today, they'll tell you you've lost your mind to have it. That shows how far we have to go. Thank you for listening to my book, Why Gold, Why Now? The War Against Your Wealth and How to Win It. Written by E.B. Tucker. Narrated by E.B. Tucker.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.